Good morning, church. My name is Eric, and I'll be reading the sermon passage for today. It's 17 verses, so bear with me. We're going to be going through 1 Samuel 22, 23, and 24. And so if you have your Bibles, you can follow along, or you can just do what most people do and look at the slides above me. Cool. 1 Samuel 22, 1 through 5. David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. And David went from there to Mizpah of Moab. And he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me." And he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. Now they told David, "Behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah, and are robbing the threshing floors." Therefore David inquired to the Lord, "Shall I go and attack these Philistines?" And the Lord said to David, "Go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah." But David's men said to him, "Behold, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines?" Then David inquired to the Lord again, and the Lord answered him, "Arise, go down to Keilah, for I will give the Philistines into your hand." And David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their livestock and struck them with a great blow. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. When Saul returned from following the Philistines, he was told, "Behold, David is in the wilderness of En Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the Wild Goats Rocks. And he came to the sheepfolds by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. And the men of David said to him, "Here is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you.'" Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And afterward, David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed." So David persuaded his men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. And Saul rose up and left the cave and went on his way.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Nice haircut. All right, good morning, everyone. We are continuing in our series on the life of David. By the way, these are really big chunks from his life, and we're just taking snippets. And so if you do have some time, I really want to encourage you to spend some time just reading through the entire chapter, because there's a lot going on that, unfortunately, we're just not able to cover. And I think it's such a wonderful story. And so we're actually going to be covering a big chunk of David's life. And so from 1 Samuel 22 all the way to the end of 1 Samuel, David is fully in this, what we describe as this in-between season, right? And so the way that we think about the in-between season is that there's a specific purpose that God speaks into our lives. But that purpose hasn't necessarily been fulfilled in our lives, and so we're in between of when God launches us into that purpose and us literally waiting on God to fulfill that purpose in our lives. And for David, that in-between season, it took about 15 years. And so think about the time that Samuel, the prophet, came to David, anointed him, right, and said, "You're going to be the next king of Israel," and God launches him on this journey. And by the time that David actually becomes king, it's about a 15-year period, roughly around there. And so it's a 15-year period of David journeying through this in-between season. And in that in-between season, what we see David doing over and over again is he is learning to wait on God. He's learning to wait on God. And I think, actually, that's one of the most challenging things about being in this in-between season, because it really is a season of learning to wait on God. And the reality is that when I think about waiting, I don't like waiting at all. My wife knows this very well. I am deathly allergic to any form of line, right? Even if there's one or two people in front of me, that's a line. And so as soon as I see a line, I hate it. Like with all of my being, every fiber of my soul, I hate waiting. So much so, this is just an honest confession, right? For the last couple of weeks, I've been trying to open a new P.O. box for our church. And so we're trying to do that near a post office near our house. But every time I go to the post office, I don't know why, it's this particular post office, it's just, there's so many dang people. And so every time I pop in to think, okay, this is the day that the Lord has made, I am going to go and open this dang P.O. box. And every time I go into the lobby, there's so many people. Well, at least I feel like there's so many people, right? And so I remember a couple times I actually tried to wait in line. But as I was waiting in line, and as I was inching closer and closer towards the counter, yet it seemed so far, I literally felt my life just wasting away. And I just gave up and said, I can't do this. I got to come back another day, right? We don't like waiting. It's interesting. I was reading an article on American Psychological Association, and they were talking about how there's been many studies that's been done. And so they were talking about a particular study that was done, and they were saying in this study they asked women who have gone through treatment for breast cancer. And they said, what was the hardest part about that experience? And believe it or not, many of the women said, it wasn't the diagnosis, and it wasn't actually the treatment, but it was the waiting after they were diagnosed with breast cancer and waiting to be treated. It was that period of uncertainty that was the hardest to bear. And so this article talks about how psychologically, waiting is really hard. It's really tough because it combines two of the hardest things that we wrestle with. So on one hand, when we wait, we're wrestling with this thought of uncertainty, right? Because we don't know when that thing is going to happen. So we're waiting for certain things, and we don't know exactly when it's going to become a reality. And so there is this uncertainty that is weighing at us. But not only that uncertainty, but then the second factor that's really hard for many people is that there is lack of control. There's nothing that you can do in that process of waiting, right? So think about it. I remember when we took our kids to Disney World, I think that's the one in Florida, right? Disney World. I think the land is the one in California. World is the one in Florida. And my kids were so young. I think we only had two, and Joshua was actually in a stroller. But I remember, like, waiting in these lines that were so dang long. And this is supposed to be, like, the happiest place on earth, right? But, like, I was looking at these lines, and I was thinking about, this is not the happiest place. This is the most miserable place on earth. Because all the kids were waiting in line, and they're just going berserker. They're just going bonkers. And then all the parents look so miserable. It's the factor of not knowing, the uncertainty, and then also just our lack of control, that we have a hard time waiting. And I think that's so true, because when I think about just seasons that I've gone through where I'm waiting on God to work, certain things that I'm praying about, I'm waiting for God to come through, to experience his breakthroughs, and it's really hard because at times we feel like we're just stuck in this in-between season where it seems like nothing's really happening. And so there's this uncertainty of we don't know exactly when God is going to do what he promised to do. And then not only uncertainty, but there's a lack of control in recognizing that there's nothing that you can really do to get yourself out of that situation. And even though these seasons of waiting, that it's hard. And at times, it's very unpleasant. But it's actually during these seasons of waiting that we discover more of who God is. And we discover more of what we actually need in our lives. And that's exactly what God brings David through during those 15 years of being on the run, of hiding, waiting on God. That it's in this season of waiting that David begins to discover more of who God is. And more of not necessarily what he thought he needed, but what he actually needed in his life. So as we look into these chapters, the one thing that I want to give us simply is this. Embrace your season of waiting because God is working to strengthen and mature us. Right? Embrace your season of waiting because it's in the seasons of waiting that God is working to strengthen and mature us. So once again, we want to think about the story and then we want to try to draw some lessons from the story. Okay? All right, so here we go. Let's think about the story. So from chapter 22 all the way through chapter 31, David is on the run from Saul. During those years, David is learning to wait on God's timing and to trust that God is the one who will fulfill his promises in his life. And when I think about that journey that David goes through, and we see this over and over again, that it was so tempting for David at certain times in that season to take matters into his own hands, especially when we get to chapter 24, and I love how real the Bible is, right? Because here's King Saul. He's trying to seek out David, and there's caves, and he doesn't know where David is, but then nature calls, and he has to do his thing, right? And so in that moment, it would have been so easy for David to have said, you know what? I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And I think that's really tempting when we're in seasons of waiting to really try to wrestle that control from God and to take matters into our own hands. And when I think about that compromise that begins to creep into our lives, I think there's a couple ways that compromise creeps into our lives. First of all, I think we're tempted to rationalize. Right? When it's hard to wait, when it's hard to trust, we tend to rationalize. And that's exactly what we see in 1 Samuel 24. So 1 Samuel 24, once again, 3 through 4, verses 3 through 4, this is what we see. And he came to the sheepfolds, by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave, and the men of David said to him, "Here is the day of which the Lord said to you, 'Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seem good to you.'" And that kind of makes sense, sort of, right? Because when you think about the circumstance of everything that's happening, it seems like what God is doing is lining everything up so that David can finally wrestle the kingdom of Israel out of Saul's hands. Because the circumstances, it seems like what God is saying is, okay, here is your chance to kill this thorn on your side. And here's your chance to seize the kingdom once for all. Except, the problem is that even as David is hearing his men, by the way, when you think about what his men are telling him, here's the day of which the Lord said to you. But that's not what God really said to David, right? And so even as David is hearing this, he begins to realize that that's actually not right. David knew in his heart that that's not right. So this is what David does. Listen, let's go on in verse 5 and 6. And afterward, David's heart struck him because he had cut off the corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed." Right? Then we have to read carefully what David is saying here. Because what David isn't saying is that we can never critique or question those who are over us. Right? What David isn't saying is that we just have to trust by faith that these are men and women that God has placed over us and that we can never critique their leadership. But what David recognizes is the fact that taking revenge on this man who has been so tireless in trying to kill him, that taking revenge, that that's not what God wanted from David. That David understood God's heart. That it would have been so easy for David to have rationalized, hey, here's this guy. Not only is he a thorn on my side, but he's actually a terrible king. And God himself has actually said that, Saul, you are disqualified. He's killing God's priests. He's being a burden to the people of God. It would have been so easy for David to have said, well, why should I not strike him down? Because if I strike him down, I'm doing not only myself, but everyone else a huge favor. But David says what? I refuse to play the role of God. Right? David understood rightly the situation. He says, I refuse to play the role of God, that God will bring about his justice over Saul in his time. So it's not that David was blind to Saul's faults. But David says, no, I'm gonna trust in God. I'm gonna trust in his timing. I'm gonna trust in his word. And I think it's so incredible that David was able to still say that even though, yes, he's fallen, he's sinful, he's in a way demonic, but he recognizes that he is still the king. That he is still the Lord's anointed. Not only do we rationalize, but secondly, we compromise. The temptation is to compromise, right? Because that's Saul's story. When you think about his downfall, 1 Samuel 13, this is what we read. 1 Samuel 13, verses 13 through 14. And Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the command of the Lord your God, with which he commanded you, for then the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought after a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be prince over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. So the situation is they're going against battle against the Philistines, and people are afraid because they're looking out, and the force that the Philistines brings, it just outmatches what Israel had to offer. And so people are afraid, and Samuel says, hey, don't worry, I'm going to come to you, and when I come, we're going to offer up offerings to God together, asking for his blessings, and he's going to empower you to fight the battle. But they're waiting, Samuel doesn't come. And so what does Saul do? He compromises on the word of God. And he says, you know what? Worship is worship. You know, offering is offering. And he sees the people fleeing, and he says, you know, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And I'm going to offer up the sacrifices. Because of his fear, instead of obeying God, he does what he thought was right in his own eyes. And oftentimes when you think about why we compromise on certain convictions, and it's not such a blatant compromise, right? Sometimes it's like shades of gray. It's not so blatant that it's being disobedient to what God has revealed to us, but it's not quite complete obedience either. And I think the reason why we compromise is because we think in our own eyes that this is what is right. Not only do we compromise, but then we also are tempted to manipulate. And when we feel like somehow that God is not delivering according to our own timetable or even our own agenda, it's tempting to manipulate our circumstances, right? It's really tempting to force things to happen. And I think about the story of Abraham and Sarah, of how God promises a son who will be an heir to this promise that God speaks into their lives. So they're waiting, waiting, one year turns into two, turns into three, turns into many. And so it's easy to think, well, you know what? I'll just help God along in this process. And so they manipulate the situation where Abraham, he has a son, but it's not through Sarah. The temptation to take matters into our own hands, it's real. Just think about maybe even the situations that we're going through in our own lives. The temptation to rationalize, the temptation to compromise, even the temptation to manipulate relationships, situations. But David says, what? I'm going to keep waiting on God. I once heard a pastor say this, that the biggest hindrance, so when you think about the struggles in our lives, he said that the biggest hindrance in our lives are not the Sauls that we face, right? When you think about the Sauls in our lives, these obstacles, these oppositions, even these dire circumstances, he says actually the biggest hindrance in our lives are not the Sauls that we face, but it's our inability to wait on God. And it's our inability to trust in his promises. And I think that's so true, because when we see the Sauls in our lives, we tend to think, okay, that's the thing that's going to come and destroy my career, or that's the thing that's going to come and hinder my children, or that's the thing that's going to come and hinder my relationship with God. But actually, it's not the Sauls, but it's our inability to wait. And it's our inability to trust in God's promises. And I think seasons of waiting is so important, because it's these seasons of waiting that we see God working to mature and refine us. One of my seminary profs, he used to say over and over again that God never uses the things that we bring to him. Right? So we come to God thinking that, okay, God's going to use me. And so we say, God, here are my experiences. Here are my talents. Here is what I can do. Here is my past accomplishments. But when we come to God, he never uses those things. Rather, he used to always say that when we come to God, that God always brings us through the wilderness. And it's in the wilderness that he causes us to wait. Because it's in that season of waiting that God begins to work. And that work that he is doing is what? That he is teaching us to be completely dependent on him and to rely on him only. The default, I don't know about you, but in my life, is to think about my own success. The default is to think about my own strengths. And so I want to step into those areas, the ministry where I know that I can thrive in. The default is to rely on myself. But God says, no, I'm going to bring you through these seasons of waiting so that you are learning to depend on me. And the reality is that I know that, I think for me, one of the harder things about preparing this message is there's nothing new here. But then I was thinking about this, that there's nothing new, and I remember God saying, but Ben, that is your problem. Because you think that there's nothing new here. But there's actually work that I want to do. Because if you think that there's nothing new here, then that's really a reflection of your heart. Where you're leaning once again on your past experiences, the past things that you've learned, and not realizing that today I'm bringing you into this new season so that there's a new understanding of what it means to depend on him. And in the season of waiting, we see David growing in these areas. First of all, in the season of waiting, we see David learning to discern what God is doing. It's in the season of waiting that David finally learns to discern what God is doing. Because up to this point, when he starts fleeing from Saul, he's just doing whatever he thinks he needs to be doing. So it's like it's pretty bad, gets worse, and then it gets really bad. We're to the point where he's pretending to be like this crazy person. And if you see that trajectory of his life, the thing that it's missing in that equation is God. He doesn't stop to think about, okay, what is God doing? But then he finally gets to that point of his life where you can't, I guess you might be able to go a little bit lower than like pretending to be a mad person, but he literally hits rock bottom and he is thinking to himself, okay, I can't go any lower. But what is God doing in my life? Maybe I need to stop for a moment. And maybe I need to think about what God is actually doing around me. And he actually begins to learn to discern what God is doing. Look at 1 Samuel 22, 1 and 2. David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress and everyone who was in debt and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him. And he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. And these are David's mighty men. And this is the core of the army that he will build. And so all these people, they're getting disillusioned by Saul. They're thinking, they're looking to their king and they're thinking, this guy, not only is he crazy, but he doesn't reflect the heart of God. And so all these people who are being disillusioned by Saul are going to David. And so I think about David hiding out in the caves. He's probably hit rock bottom. And when you hit rock bottom, it's so easy for you to just start feeling sorry for yourself. And when you start feeling sorry for yourself, you have no room to think about other people. And so it would have been so easy for David to have said, you know what? Gosh, it's hard enough for me to think about my own life, yet all these other people, my family's coming to me, all these other people, so what am I supposed to do with them? But look at what David does. In verse 2b, and as these men are gathered around David, we're told that he became commander over them. Right? In other words, he was able to discern what God was doing. He recognized that these men who were gathering around him, that this was a God thing. And even though he wasn't the king of Israel yet, but he said, you know what? God is bringing these men to my life. So what? I'm going to shepherd them. I'm going to discipline them. I'm going to raise them up in the ways of the Lord. And so he sees the opportunity because he recognizes what God is doing around him. And not only is he able to discern what God is doing, secondly, he also learns to see God's voice again. Right? This is so important. He learns to see God's voice again. 1 Samuel 23, 1 and 2. And now they told David, behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah and are robbing the threshing floor. Therefore, David inquired of the Lord, shall I go and attack these Philistines? And the Lord said to David, go attack the Philistines and save Keilah. Up to this point, David is just making decisions based on his understanding of his circumstance. But there's a shift that happens. And that shift is what? That David finally says, wait a minute. I think I should ask God. God, what are your thoughts? Like, what do you want me to do? And David finally seeks God's voice again. Right, which means David finally seeks to center his life around God again and not necessarily centering his life around his circumstances. And not only does he learn to seek God's voice again, but when that voice comes, he learns to obey that voice again. Goes on, verse 3 and 5. But David's men said to him, behold, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines? Then David inquired of the Lord again, and the Lord answered him, Rise, go down to Keilah, and I will give the Philistines into your hand. And David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines and brought away their livestock and struck them with a great blow. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. When the voice of God comes, it's never easy to step out in faith because there's always going to be these thoughts of, but is that really true? And when God says to David, go, and David asks his men, guys, what do you think? And they're like, I don't know. Well, it seems like a pretty crazy idea, right? Because here we are, hiding out, running for our lives. Yet you want us to go battle with the Philistines. Yeah, David, I don't think so. Maybe you heard wrong. And so why don't you go and ask God again? Well, that's not what it says, but that's what I'm imagining in my mind of the conversation that they're having. So when David goes and asks a second time, and when God says to David, go, David says, we're going to go. And he learns to obey God's voice again. And so what we are seeing is a gradual shift. And so it's really amazing because when you think about circumstances, circumstances haven't really changed that much. Because even this point on, David is going to be on the run. And Saul is going to be after him. And in 1 Samuel 24, it's literally Saul sending 3,000 of his best against David's 400 men. So even though the circumstances don't necessarily change, but what is changing is David's heart, where he says, you know what? I can't think about the circumstance according to my wisdom and according to what we need, but what I need is to hear God's voice. And that when that voice comes and when there's opposing voices, David says, you know, let me ask God again. And when God speaks the second time, David says, we have to go. And so he steps out in faith and he obeys God again. And ultimately, David learns to trust God. It's through season of listening and obeying and listening and obeying and listening and obeying, he learns to trust God. And I think it's not by accident that David goes through these situations and circumstances in chapter 22, chapter 23, so that by the time we get to chapter 24, and when David had that opportunity to take revenge, I think if that actually happened earlier in David's life, I actually don't know if David would have recognized that that is God's anointed. I think David actually might have taken matters into his own hands. But because he's learning to listen, because he's learning to obey, because he's learning to trust, when that situation comes, he says, you know what? I'm going to worship God. I refuse to take matters into my own hands. And I'm going to trust in God. And it's this wonderful season where God leads David through the season of waiting. And it's in that season of waiting that he begins to shape his life. So that he's listening, he's obeying, he's discerning, and ultimately he's trusting. So what lessons can we learn? It was actually during the season of life that David wrote Psalm 57. So if you have your Bibles, turn with me to Psalm 57. In the beginning of Psalm 57, it's pretty interesting. In my version, ESV, it says, to the choir master according to Do Not Destroy. I don't know what that means. A miktam of David when he fled from Saul in the cave. And so he's fleeing from Saul. He's in the cave. He writes Psalm 57. And what this psalm reveals to us is that even in this difficult season of David's life, that this is what David used to nurture his heart, right? It's so important for us to be nurturing our hearts. And so first of all, David nurtures his heart by remembering that God is still in charge. He nurtures his heart by remembering that God is the one who is still in charge during these seasons of life. Look at Psalm 57, 1 and 2. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me. For in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. So David, he recognizes his situation. It's hard. It's difficult. I think one of the really encouraging things about David is his honesty. When he goes through stuff, he says, I'm going through stuff, right? He doesn't spiritualize it. He doesn't fake it. He expresses the difficulties, but even in the midst of it, he says what? He says, God, I'm going to remember that you are the one who will fulfill your purpose for me. In other words, David is saying, God, I'm going to remember that you are the one who is in charge. Even though Saul is after me, he is not the one who is in charge, but it is you, God. And I think it's so important for us to remember that. That when you're battling faith, when you're battling doubt because of your circumstances, maybe it's stress, maybe you're becoming disillusioned. It's so important for us to remember that it's not the circumstances that are in charge of your life, but it is God. Beth Moore, she's a Christian writer and speaker. She writes about this period of David's life. She says this, talking about how David recognizes Saul as God's anointed. She says, and I quote, David withdrew from taking the life of Saul out of respect for God, not Saul. David's incomparable respect for God kept him from making a tragic and costly mistake. If you are willing to honor a person out of respect for God, you can be assured that God will honor you. Several times, I've been required to honor a person out of honor to God. A very strange thing has happened. Almost every time I've been obedient to God in this area, he has restored my respect for the person I had come to resent. God is always faithful. The result of your obedience may differ, but the blessing of your obedience is guaranteed, unquote. David is learning. God, you're the one who is in charge. And when I step out in obedience, that you bless me. And not only does he remember that God is the one in charge, but number two, he continues to nurture his heart by remembering the steadfast love and the faithfulness of God. Because listen to what he writes in verses 3 and 4. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame who trample on me. God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. That God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. David declares, God, I know you will fulfill your purpose in me because you are steadfast in your love. Because you faithful. And what we see here, especially in Psalm 57, is this wonderful reminder. David reminds us that worship is always a choice. Right? Worship is always a choice. He recognizes that in his situation, there's two options. Either he can worship his own feelings, because circumstances dictate that this is how you should feel, or he says, I can choose to worship God. And that's what we see. And so let's read the rest of the psalm here. Verse 4 and on, he says, my soul is in the midst of lions. I lie down amid fiery beasts, the children of men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They set a net for my steps. My soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my glory. Awake, O harp and lyre. I will wake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O God, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations. For your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. And the lesson David is learning here, that he says, God, this is how I feel, as if the lions are coming after me. There are traps everywhere, but he says, God, I choose to worship you. I choose to make you the ultimate in my life. And I think when I think about seasons of waiting that God brings us through, that is the greatest lesson that you can learn. Because when you declare, God, I choose to make you the ultimate, what you are saying is, God, I choose to depend on you completely. God, I choose to lean on you. God, I choose to be surrendered to you. And I embrace the work that you are doing in strengthening and maturing me. So once again, the one thing is this: embrace your seasons of waiting, because God is working to strengthen and mature us. God is working to strengthen and mature us. So how do we make this personal? First of all, look up. That's what David does, right? He looks up. He fixes his eyes on God, remembering the greatness of God. But not only does he that, but he looks behind. He remembers all the ways that God has been faithful to him. Look behind. Whenever you begin to doubt, whenever you begin to feel that somehow your feelings are becoming more important than God, look behind and remember the faithfulness of God. But also look around. He looks around and he sees the work that God is doing. And he says, you know what? Instead of feeling sorry for myself, I'm going to be involved in what God is doing. Maybe it's not in the way that I imagine. I'm thinking to myself, by this time I should have been king. But here are these ragtag band of people that God is gathering around me. But he looks around and he says, this is what God is doing. I'm going to be involved in that. Look up, look behind, and look around. And remember that God is working in you to strengthen you and to mature you. All right, let's pray together. Can we stand together? You know, the reality is that I don't even have to guess. I think all of us are in that season of waiting. Because it's in that season of waiting that God does the most important work. And maybe some of you are feeling discouraged. Maybe some of you are feeling blah. Right? Maybe some of you are feeling stuck. Maybe some of you are feeling confused. But I just want to encourage us through the life of David. Hang on. Because even though it might not be the most pleasant thing, I promise that if you are willing to look up, to look back, and to look around, God is going to use this season to strengthen and mature you. Like I was sharing with some of the brothers, I started my exercise routine again because it got thrown off. As soon as you start running, rowing, using my weight vest, all that again, my legs are killing me. It hurts. Like whenever I have to walk upstairs, my legs are killing me. And I'm walking towards a treadmill thinking, oh my God, I don't want to do this again. And even though it hurts, I know that it's going to make me healthier. I know that if I keep at it, it's not going to hurt. Well, it'll still hurt. But in the midst of that hurt, I'll discover joy. And I just feel like God is wanting to encourage some of us with that. And in the midst of all that you're wrestling through it, God is at work in you so that you will discover joy. Let me pray that for us. Father, I just pray for our church. I pray for every single one of us. maybe some of us can identify so well with the season of waiting and just all the difficulties that David experienced. Maybe some of us are in the midst of difficulties ourselves. And it's so easy to compromise. It's so easy to manipulate. It's so easy to try to take matters into our own hands. But Father, I pray that you'll encourage us once again this morning by reminding us that you are doing a good work, God, in our lives. So may we continue to trust in you. May we continue to trust not in our abilities, not in our thoughts, not in our past successes, but may we continue to trust in you, to lean on your wisdom, to lean on your ways, to lean on your strength, to lean on your promises, that as we do that, God, I pray for my brothers and sisters that you will make their path straight before them. That through this season, that they will once again learn to listen to your voice, that they will learn to obey your voice, that they will learn to discern the work that you are doing around them, that they will learn to trust in you, God. So I pray for that blessing. I pray that you will empower them, God, in this season of life. So as we close out our time together, can I just give us a little bit before our band leads us in closing worship, maybe for a minute or so? You know your circumstance. You know the things that you're wrestling with in your heart. But embrace the promises of God, that he is at work and that he still reigns over your circumstance, and he will carry you through his steadfast love and commitment to you. And if that ever becomes fuzzy, remember the cross, where he demonstrated his sovereign grace at work in our lives. So can I just invite us to pray through that just for a little bit, and then after that our band will lead us in time of closing. Okay, so let's do that, church. Let's pray a little bit before we close out. Let's pray together.